Hey guys, this is the Brothers Whiffs number 42. Believe it or not, I can't believe we've stuck on schedule for so long. So with us today, we've got a handful. I think Thomas is probably going to join in a little bit later. But today we have an old regular back from Ireland, Tom Smith.
How are you doing, guys?
Doing well. And then also we have Mike Hammett from Indiana. Or, oh no,
Illinois.
you're Chicago. Yeah, you're up a little bit further north. And then we've got Thomas Kurnack that just popped in. He's all the way from Slovakia.
Hello, everybody.
Haha. He'll
Howdy,
probably
guys.
switch to his laptop, which he always does, so we can see his beautiful locks. His long flowing hair. It's where he derives his strength. He's like a Greek god. No comment. I love it. Here we
Wow, I don't even know what to say to that.
Forging ahead. Let's see. A little bit of interesting things, a little bit of hardware updates. Let's jump right in. YouTube TV got announced this week. Is it this week? Yeah, it was this week. It was like Tuesday this week. Today's March 4th, 2017, and so it was just a few days ago. But YouTube TV is supposed to be their over-the-top TV service, kind of like DirecTV Now, but it seems a little better, actually. Lineup looks like the normal, the rather the usual suspects, I guess. So your NBC, ABC, CBS, looks like most of the major networks. But something I really liked that was on here is ESPN, right? So sports. Everybody says cable's not dead. It's never going to die until you can get sports over the top. Well, it looks like YouTube has gone a long way towards helping people cut the cable, which I think is pretty crazy. I'm interested. It sounds like this is going to be available in major markets first, and then go from there. I'm guessing major markets because they're going to be doing local TV channels as well, and so probably going to try and get those content rights for the local channels in the major markets. I'm looking forward to Austin, Dallas, Houston. I'm down here in Texas, so I'm looking forward to that stuff hitting down here. What do you guys think about it? What's your opinion?
I'm assuming that they're building upon some of the foundation that Google Fiber has laid, and because they're doing TV service in all of their markets, and so I assume they're just taking that and building it out across the United States. But one thing to note is that the markets that will go live first are markets where they're able to negotiate those retransmission rights for the local channels. So not necessarily a big market if the owners of the stations in the big market are uncooperative.
So you're saying in the Google Fiber markets, they're probably going to jump on that one first? Although that's almost like kind of poaching in their own backyard, or what do you think? They'll already have
Well,
those
but
rights
like,
negotiated there.
yeah, like the rights are already negotiated. They don't obviously have every and where Google Fiber has built out, it's only a small portion of that metro. I mean, you think Kansas City, they've built out parts of a couple towns, but the Kansas City metro, I mean, it's what? It's probably 7,550 miles across. It's a huge area. For any, because I'm still, I'm still considered in the Chicago metro area, and I'm 60 miles away. So, it's a huge market where those TV signals go. So they can still build out their TV presence in those markets. But they have to get all of the local channels to be on board, or it's, not worth their time, so.
Yeah. I feel like this is going to be a new service from YouTube, right? This is going to be something greenfield. Obviously, they're used to streaming content. They've been doing the YouTube live streaming, so they know how to do all that stuff. Just in this form and fashion, they've never done it. So I know somebody that's been using the DirecTV Now, the streaming service from them, and they said for the first couple of days it was great, and then after that it's been really kind of hit or miss, no matter where they're hitting it from. But that was, a brand new adventure for DirecTV, and they. DirecTV doesn't have the online DVR capabilities. YouTube, they said it's going to be unlimited online DVR. I think six users simultaneously, so six people in your house. I want to say it's going to come out to somewhere around $35 a month. That's dirt cheap. So this is something they're going to be used to doing. I think they've got plenty of capacity, so I think it's going to be a solid service coming from them as opposed to like the DirecTV Now. Obviously, they always say be first to the market if you can, and DirecTV Now has that, but I think YouTube's got the chops to make this happen better so than DirecTV Now. Although, I mean, DirecTV is owned by AT&T, so you'd think they'd get their stuff together pretty fast. I don't know. Who knows?
I think the main challenge is probably the content licensing and stuff like that. I think that's probably their biggest impediment. Like, in fairness, technology-wise, yeah, and the Google caches on big networks, which allows for opportunity for multicast and, let's say, live streams and all that, so saving on bandwidth and performance that way. Like, that's what, let's say, some of the larger providers in Ireland do in terms of, you know, doing the live streams, you know, that kind of way. I was working on that project. It was quite interesting, actually, to see, you know, they were doing IPsec multicast and then using a TLS session to negotiate the keys. So you'd actually have the keys, obviously, on a unicast session, and then you were actually just joining a multicast session that was encrypted with IPsec multicast. So it was kind of cool. So, like, if anyone can do it, Google can, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They can use their own caches as kind of like a multicast proxy and just send in the streams and then distribute it on the provider network.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, you bring up a good point, or maybe you just kick-started something in my head, or maybe it was Mike, but, you know, I'd looked at probably 4 years ago, hey, how do I get an IPTV delivery and get this to people? And it was just, it all came down to content rights. It was such a nightmare to try and negotiate that stuff. And then there were these things about, okay, well, you can deliver it to a property, but you can't pass a right of way. You can't go across the street with it. Just all these weird, strange rules they had surrounding that. And so I'm guessing YouTube, doing the Google Fiber, they finally got enough, they got enough pull. You know, they had enough money going to these content providers where they said, hey, guess what? We want to do with it now. And, you know, we're giving you this much amount. Because I remember somebody was telling me, he was like, you know what, I've been negotiating content rights for the last 15 years. He was a content right lawyer. And he said, you know, I have small guys come to me, like you all the time, saying, hey, I've got 4,000 subscribers that I want to serve. And he's like, but then, you know, I can go to these content providers and say, yeah, they want to do this stuff over the top, you know. And then the incumbents will come and they'll say, okay, well, I've got, I don't know, 4 million eyeballs, and we want you to only deliver it this way. Who do you think they're going to listen to? All right, and so I guess until you get enough clout, until you get enough money going their way, the way Google does, you know, they aren't going to listen. So maybe it's finally the time, right? You can stream HBO on the internet. You can do Disney, you know, is doing their streaming service. It seems like everybody's going online. So, man, it just seems like nobody really wants to get a cable internet connection, or honestly, a kind of a satellite TV. That's sort of going away as well. I don't know. I like the way things are going, though, because I like being an internet service provider, and I don't necessarily want to be a television provider. So if this makes it an easy way for me to compete with the incumbents, I'm all for it, right? If I can say, you know what, that guy is offering you triple play, well, guess what, I'll do double play, and everybody's going to get YouTube TV anyway. So what do you need this other stuff for, you know? I think it kind of helps your argument.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, let's see some other stuff that was interesting. I think it was this last week, AWS S3 had an outage. What is that, out on the East Coast? And it all came down to human error. A guy was supposedly trying to shut some nodes down or something, and he accidentally shut down a huge chunk of the farm, which then cascaded, and it ended up taking him down for 4-something hours, something like that, you know? And since then, they've put in limitations on the number of units that people can bring down for reboot or maintenance or anything like that. And I think when it went down, the reboot procedure, they had some failures there, and it took longer than they expected, and just a series of unfortunate events, man. That's crazy, right? Everybody's putting everything into the cloud. Cloud, cloud, cloud. It's got to be the cloud. And then what happens when the cloud's not available? I think I saw some reports that they could quantify that of customers using AWS into the hundreds of millions of dollars of loss due to that outage for only 4 hours. Yeah, hundreds and hundreds of millions. So that's a bit of a slap in the face. It's good for, so transparency, I work for a data center, and this is one of the reasons people come into a private co-location, right, is that you wholly control the infrastructure, so you're not dependent on, say, an AWS. But I'm not saying cloud's bad. I'm just saying I felt a little vindicated when it happened. I was like, oh, really? Because everybody here is fine. But I definitely see that as being a huge portion of the future, is the cloud infrastructure. It's just, man, don't you know you've been where that guy's been? That made the wrong change. You've been there. Everybody's been there.
I don't know what you're talking about, Craig.
Yeah, of course
I've
not.
Never, ever made a mistake.
Me neither. Or maybe I've never made a mistake that anybody could detect or pin on me. But everybody's made that mistake where you type something and all of a sudden you just start sweating instantly because you realize what you've done. So you're telling me you've never accidentally
log into a box.
Never...
Windows admin at the time, and of course, jump onto a Linux console, Control Alt Delete. No, no, I didn't want to do that. No.
Yeah, I remember core switch for a network I used to work on a long time ago. I removed a route map off an interface, and it crashed all the traffic, and I had to call in and say, "Hey, you know that big chassis? Can you pull both the power supplies out really quick and stick them back in for me?" That was unfortunate. But everybody's been there. Thomas has never been there, though. You can tell by the look on his face. You've never been hundreds of miles away and accidentally disabled an IP and you realized it was the wrong router. It was the wrong Winbox interface you were in or anything like that. Nobody's ever done that kind of thing.
We are all professionals here. Nobody makes those mistakes.
Good times. So speaking of unfortunate events, Cloudflare had one as well. I think this last week or the week before, they got caught with their pants down linking information. I think it was some kind of proxying error or something like that, but people were able to pull private information, like supposedly like TLS encrypted traffic, they were able to pull that stuff out. And I saw some sample information of, like, exchanges from, like, OkCupid messages or something like that that people were able to extract out of Cloudflare. From what I read, it was only a small period of time that information was exposed, but I think it even got exposed to, like, search engines so you could look in Google for that cached information that got leaked out. So that's fairly unfortunate. I think they finally put a cap on that. Did either of you guys get hit by any of the AWS stuff? Or any of you guys? I was gonna say you European guys probably didn't feel it, but
I don't have anything there.
No, we don't either. But we use Salesforce, and it's got this plugin called Pardot used to spam people. It's kind of like a MailChimp sort of thing, and we sent out some email campaigns, and all of a sudden, all of the images disappeared from them. Just poof. Apparently, all that stuff was stored out there, so we felt it to some degree or another.
Yeah, and then, you know, the best thing about the Amazon one is that they tell you, do not depend upon one availability region. If it's important, use multiple. And you get to see, when these things happen, who hasn't taken advantage of multiple regions or even multiple cloud providers.
Yeah, I think it was also
your service.
That server that's like, is it down? Is it down for me or everyone or something like that?
Down detector, I think.
Yeah, it was actually hosted in S3 only, so it was down. And I think also like their cloud status page that you could log in and look at the information based on all their clouds was hosted there too, so that was completely offline during the outage, which is just, man, that sucks. It's a bad thing.
Or else they just didn't want to tell you how bad it was.
They supposedly rectified all those things, so who knows. Another...
Yeah, the best status update I've ever seen is we can now update the status page. Like, they fix enough things, they can update the status page.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I think it's... I remember reading an article, because it's not the first time it happened with AWS. I mean, I think one time they managed to put all the routes in over the management network or something like that. So where they had like tens or hundreds of gigs of traffic, they basically started trying to shove it down, you know, 100 meg or 1 gig pipe. So that were actually the management plane. And then just one guy goes, look, cloud scalable and all that, but your problems scale with it. So when things go wrong, they're freaking horrible.
They
like,
go
you
really
know?
Wrong. I think last year they had an outage in Australia. I think it was them or Microsoft. I can't remember, but they completely lost power in one data center, and somehow it tipped everything else over, and so they lost all of Australia for a while. But stuff happens, I guess. That's the world we live in. Like Mike said, diversify. Put it in multiple places if you can. Let's see. It was a bad week for SHA-1 encryption. They found out collisions are possible. It was always theoretical. It's still not terribly practical, I think, for your average person. A collision being, you know, if you do an encryption and it creates a hash, right? If you were able to take a completely different file and then have it encrypt and then create the exact same hash, that's a collision, right? So they've been able to create collisions on their own. So theoretically, you could create some file that was malicious, have it hash. Okay. So they were able to create collisions on their own. They said it doesn't sound terribly practical. I think they said it takes 110 years of GPU cycles, right? So I guess if you get 110 GPUs, that's 1 year's worth of time, right? And so I guess a state actor or somebody with a lot of computing process could probably actually do this fairly rapidly. But I think for your average kid in their basement, that's not going to be super practical. It seems like SHA-1 has been depreciated for some stuff. I think I was reading that there are a few fairly large services that still use it. Did they say that? I think Git maybe relies on it pretty heavily, and maybe some other places. I'm not really sure. I'm probably talking out my butt, but it is not an insignificant thing to happen, so that's interesting. Does that concern you, Tom or Thomas?
It's been well known that this can happen. It's easily mathematically calculated, you know, how much it takes to to get a collision and how secure cryptographically a protocol is. So the fact that it actually happened for the first time, you know, this it has been known for a while, like you said, that SHA-1 should be deprecated, and, you know, it's at this point not feasible for secure applications. So this should surprise nobody, really.
Yeah. I don't know. Something's possible and then it finally happens. There's always a bit of surprise, I think. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, all right, they actually did. They made it to the moon. It's a thing that could happen. There they are.
I suppose with all, like, hashed algorithms, they have, I suppose, a shelf life. And I don't know how long SHA-1 has been around. Like, MD5 was collision central for a good few years now. So, like, you know, it's one of those things. I suppose what the step here that surprise people is that you actually have a practicable implementation that could actually be acted upon by a state actor or in a demonstrable way. Like, you know, I think that's kind of interesting. While the other ones were kind of more, it's like an abstract or a theoretical thing that not that worried about it, to be honest. You know,
yeah.
Use a better hashing algorithm.
Okay.
It's interesting, like, but...
Fair enough. All right, Mike.
Don't think I'll be toward a new one by it anytime soon.
Yeah, it's not going to sneak up and bite you. All right, Mike, you're either popping popcorn or you're typing. We're over to the FCC Form 477 filing extension. That's one of your gems that you put up. For quick and dirty people, what is Form 477?
Form 477 is the form that has been required to be filed to the FCC semi-annually for a very long time, and lots of WISPs don't really care. Originally, all it did was you used it to provide how many customers you have where at what maximum speeds of service. And by where, it was census tracts, which are a fairly large area. You know, they've been using this data to kind of track, you know, how their policies are working to, you know, broadband adoption at various levels. And then when the national broadband map ceased updates, they added in a portion where you were to provide your coverage as well on a census block basis, which is now quite small. In a town, it could be literally one block. So it's every March 1st, you're required to file data as of December 31st, just before that. And then September 1st for June 1st.
All right, what are the repercussions if you don't file?
You get fined, and fined heavily. Right, people have been fined $25,000, I think, for not filing.
That's fairly heavily. So is this only people carrying telecommunications, or is it internet providers as well?
Internet of any kind.
Internet of any kind.
That you build to an end user.
FCC seems to have a lot of teeth, like, to be honest. In Europe, and certainly in Ireland, our regulators don't really mind as long as you're not spewing out stuff over licensed frequencies, particularly FM and all that type of stuff. Generally, they've kind of left us alone, thankfully.
Yeah, I wouldn't worry. Your boy Trump, he's going to get rid of all that regulation, Tom, so nothing to fear.
Yeah, well, maybe they could use the opportunity to... you know, when they're building that wall to run a fiber alongside to connect a couple of cities.
Put some conduit in there. Yeah. While you're at it.
But yeah. All I'm going to say, guys, on the 8th of November... Sorry.
All right.
But, this would not be the first time that the FCC systems were unavailable in the time frame of the filing dates. Maybe even be the third time that they've said, turn in by this day. And like 2 weeks before, they're like, our servers are broken. We'll let you know when they're back.
Gotcha. So for Form 477, is there any cost associated with that? Did people have to pay to submit these? You basically just, you do your paperwork and you call it a day.
No cost to submit. You can do it all on your own, but of course that's tedious. Recommend a billing platform to most billing platforms can do at least the subscriber portion that says, you know, I have customers in these spots and spit out the form you need for that. Only one or two billing systems can also do the coverage area as well. If your billing system cannot do the coverage area, someone like Tower Coverage can provide that information for you. For a while, PowerCode was spitting out some bad files, and so people were severely underreporting their coverage, which isn't really legally a problem.
Yeah, it's not like they're going to come out and audit you, right?
But like, there are several services out there that take that data, take the publicly available data, which is only the coverage area portion, and provide, you know, how to find broadband services. Broadband Now is one of them. You go there and type in their zip code and it tells you who all is there. The past few months, there's been a lot of us complaining that Broadband Now is inaccurate, only to find out that they haven't been filing accurate 477s. So you have to give FCC good data to have proper representation on these other services.
Yeah. Garbage in, garbage out. Beach to it.
Sorry. Let's hope the recording that I have lower latency to.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's coming all the way from Ireland. Yeah, blah, 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 blah. All right, cool.
Yeah, no, but does that have anything to do with CAF, the Connect America Fund, the one that allows the government to tear the little guy a new arsehole by funding the biggest players in the market.
Yeah, yeah, with that stuff, the big boys thought, hey, this is our money, and that's kind of how they operated. That's actually changing a little bit. I'm working with a group that just got a chunk of that money from the government to put fiber infrastructure in to connect rural health, which is really cool. So all these little kind of health clinics, they're starting to lay fiber as well as be able to do IRUs with fiber providers. But you know what else they did, which I thought was really just kick-ass, was they said, hey, you know all these rural schools that have a T1 going into them? They have a nurse in there, right? So that's healthcare. And so they were able to actually add all these little tiny schools that are super underserved to this list. So they're going to be able to fiber light all of this stuff all throughout like these five counties, at least in, right surrounding me. Which I think was really, yeah, man, that's like, it's sort of being very loose with the...
What's really nice about that as well is this is double whammy because they get money for fiber in those schools. And then AT&T lose T1 service fees and all the schools.
Well, you know what? It's funny. Because
kind of poetic justice.
Over here in the States, we have this thing called E-Rate. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with that. But it's... Tom, you're not going to be familiar with it. Anyway, basically what it is it's a subsidy for poorer schools generally. If you have underperforming students or you're really rural, you'll get this percentage of subsidy on your telecom bills. So at the highest percentage, the government will pay 80% of your telecom costs. You only have to cover 20%, right? So it can save a lot of money. But out in these rural areas, there's only one provider. There's one incumbent. So they know how this E-rate system works. So when they're doing the E-rate bid, they'll say, oh, how much money do you have? You know, you have $100. All right, what's, let's see, let's take that, add on, okay, it'll be $1,200 a month. That's what it is. And then E-rate will pick up, right, instead of actually giving them a real quote, they're just gaming the system and then sucking down our tax dollars, which it's a travesty. It's what happens all over our states. And that's nationwide, the E-rate system is. And so being able to fund these transit providers that are really just looking to light up these schools and stuff, it's going to cut all that bullshit out, you know. And there's starting to be, here in the States, a lot of online standardized testing. It's really starting to just kind of move across the nation. And I know, like in Tennessee, when I was living there, they had these mandates where for every student, you had to have X megabits of bandwidth, right? And so as these schools get really big, I mean, you're talking, you know, you end up having to have 2 gigs of bandwidth. And that can just be super cost prohibitive, right? Like you almost, like in some instances, I've heard of staff having to be laid off to be able to afford these bandwidth costs, right? And it's crazy. This kind of stuff is happening. It comes down to the incumbents putting the squeeze on these guys, right? And they just need somebody to come in, make kind of like a co-op situation, get all these people together and say, this is what we need to do, connect all the dots, and actually use these tax dollars appropriately.
Government subsidies for big business, but it's not really. The business is just providing a service privately.
That stuff burns me
up.
But
it is a government subsidy.
Yeah. Anyway, so I get off my high horse on
but
that.
It looks like they're spending it on education, though. That's what's really nice as well for the end of year reports. It's like we're putting all this money into education, but really we're just giving a kickback to our backers in Congress.
Yeah. It's good, man. They just need to start putting this stuff in the right. So they're starting to do some things right, which I'm relieved about. I can't say I'm excited. You know, it's like Jesus, about time. You know, thankfully.
No, it's good. But it's nice when the little guys, because they'll have a better service locally.
Oh, yeah.
You're actually investing in local jobs there.
Yeah, they care. Yeah. And it, helps out the community, helps out the demographics, helps out, I mean, creates jobs. It's good all the way around. It's good stuff.
Puts I like when the little guy wins, Joe the Plumber.
Me too. Everybody likes an underdog story, man.
He won under Obama. I wonder how he'll do under Trump.
We're going to figure out how to deport him. Let's see. Let's talk about greener pastures, better things. We mentioned the Siklu point-to-point stuff, and they had just the vaguest of announcements. Now there's actually just a teeny bit more meat. They have some images. I mean, it's a solid-looking little square. I don't know. It's got Siklu on it. It looks like it's 60 gigahertz, right? So it's millimeter wave. Something I thought was interesting is they made it sound like you don't have to do a whole lot to align these things, because they're saying it auto-aligns via beamforming. So I guess it's going to kind of find the signal and form itself that direction. I'm sure there's some manipulation you have to do, but maybe not too much. I think it was saying the APs have like 3 Ethernet ports or something like that hanging off of them. Other than that, I didn't really see a whole lot. I didn't see a street price for sure.
I've been sent pricing that I can't say out loud. It's a little...
Can you put it in the chat window?
It's more than the current platform that's out there that just doing 60 gig multipoint.
So,
but it's not really ridiculous.
Oh,
especially if it's doing beamforming and stuff too.
It's more than other people doing. So let's see, IgniteNet is doing some 60 gig stuff, and I think theirs is about $500 a unit. So you're saying it's more than that, but less.
It's more than their current Siklu stuff.
He can neither confirm nor deny.
The Siklu generally is around 3K. So it's more than that, yeah.
But they're actually at MWC 17, which is where they had some more of this information. There's actually a lot of 60 gig announcements made there. There's obviously the star of the show currently is the Siklu 60 gig multipoint, which you've been talking about, but. Saragon also has a 60 gig point to point they're coming out with now. I believe it's Cambridge Networks. That's who this CBNL stands for. They're making a 60 gig, 5 gig multi point platform. So just like the IgniteNet.
Gotcha. 60 gig main and then a failover to the 5.
Yeah. And then Cambridge, the. Other WISPs may know them. They provide multi-point gear for 28 gigahertz and 39 gigahertz in the United States. It's not widely used, but of course I go to ask about it just as one of the license holders that was reselling their or leasing out their spectrum had a mass signed and so they're off the table for a while, so I can't use it. But maybe this one I could. Hmm. And then there's another company, Intracom, 60 gigahertz multi-point. Never even heard of them. So we'll see what that's like.
Cool. They just need to send you products so you can test it out, right?
I will gladly accept no-cost product. And give you a fair evaluation.
Gotcha. Fair and honest is what he's saying, so you better hope he likes it.
Fair and balanced.
I will be very fair, fair and balanced. I will be very honest.
Excellent, excellent. So while we're talking about hardware, Mike posted...
Without the liberal bias, I might add, Mike.
Liberal bias.
What was that?
Oh, without the liberal bias.
I would not provide that, no.
He's such a socialist. So IgniteNet MetroLink put out a firmware update just recently, and then the Mimosa A5 firmware update came out, and the Mimosa adds GPS sync functionality. I think they said, what did they say? RTFM on that one. Be sure you read the manual on the GPS sync. I'm guessing it's not just straightforward clicking, hitting a checkbox. I'm sure there's a little bit more to it.
Yeah, I know that like some settings that change if you just without putting thought into it, you can very well strand all your customers. So basically, it's just pay attention, read the manual, don't piss off your customers.
Don't orphan anybody. Real quick, while it's still on the list, I know this isn't hardware, and we have more hardware after that. But Shinog registration's open. Mike, pop that up, and then. Via the Nanog list, I saw Tom Kopchinski is calling for presentations. So if you guys have anything you'd like to present, he's actually got a little bit of a list, kind of the things they're looking for and the things to avoid a bit, I believe. So I'd say reach out to him if you've got anything you want to share. you go into that, Mike? It's up in your neck of the woods.
Yeah, yeah. I've gone for the past few years, and I'll probably go again.
Cool, cool. Have you met Tom? He's one of the organizers.
Yeah, we've met at the shows a couple of times. He's usually either Justin or myself. Usually Justin doing some sort of Midwest IX pitch, because they usually have at least one session or partial session on peering. And so, different exchanges are there, talking about their operations. And so we've talked a few times. He's actually moved to a new company. He was with Rackspace.
Yeah.
I forget who he's with now.
Yeah, I can't remember the name. It's CDN. I told him once he gets that thing completely up and off the ground, he'll have to tell us about all the pains of completely building a CDN network and infrastructure. That's a bit of a different slant than I've heard before. So he's a sharp dude, too. So it'd be cool. Let's see. Yeah, he's like Polish. So it's like somehow I only meet foreigners. I don't understand that. And Mike, you're just weird as hell. So I guess you kind of fall in there. See how I just classified all foreigners as weird? Yeah, there you go. Let's see. Also on here we have RF Elements has a stock locator. So I guess you can find the distributor with the, the nearest distributor with the amount of whatever you need and all those fancy horns everybody's going crazy about.
Yeah, no, I like their gear. It's pretty good.
Excellent. And Mike's BFFs with Tasso, so it's good.
Yeah.
They've never run into each other. Never banged heads.
It's not before a couple months ago, anyway.
Ah, you'll get over it. He'll buy you a beer. You'll be all right.
Tassos doesn't strike me as the guy. Hi, Tassos, as being sensitive.
Yeah.
He can take slagging. He gives one of the good slagging too.
Yeah.
If being mad at Tassos gets him to buy me a beer, I will be mad at him frequently.
Really?
Every time I see him, just so he buys me a beer.
I'm sure.
Maintain that the guys in RF Elements owe me a few beers. So, guys, send a slab to my home address. Private message me if you don't have it. Slab of beer. Thank you.
Slab of beer. That's a weird turn of phrase.
If you don't have it, I'll put it in the comments.
About 24 cans of beer.
All right, so Mike put in here the Dens. It used to be Renesis, and I guess Den bought Renesis. Their Bickers Dozen for 2016 came out. I don't have it in front of me. Since I'm traveling, I've got my one-screen laptop, and I can't pull anything up. Otherwise, you guys would see all
the
kind
usual
of
suspects.
But
11-3 on top, Cogent shooting up behind them closely.
I think Talia is always way up there at the top, and NTT, I think, is always up towards the top. And it's all the same folks, right?
Talia actually spent a couple months above level 3 for the first time. Someone's above level 3 in quite a long time. Kojin went from number 8 to number 4. Or 3, there you are.
I think it depends on the metric they use, because I think in terms of connected ASs, I think one of them was level 3 then Kojin.
Yeah, Kojin's way up there on connected AS.
I believe, their formula is secret. They basically say, it's not really important what formula is, but here's what we do.
Whoever pays us the most.
Well, they actually have a paid-for service, and they'll give you details if you pay for their service.
Wow, fair enough.
But this just gives public, here's what you need to know. If you want to know more, buy our service, we'll tell you.
Yeah, I've been using Talia about 2.5 years, I think, now, and they've been super solid for me. A couple of hiccups occasionally, but as soon as you call into support, I mean, you have an actual engineer, and their layer one guys are really good, so I've been able to mitigate most things pretty quickly. I like working with them, so I'm a big fan of Talia. Not a huge fan of level 3. I put them right up there with AT&T, and what is it? So, Frontier sold a bunch of their stuff to Global Crossing, then Level 3 bought Global Crossing, and Level 3 bought Time Warner, and so they have three colored networks. And sometimes when you order circuits, the circuit ID will still be today, FRO, and that stands for Frontier. And so they still have those old vestiges of that in their system, and now CenturyLink's buying Level 3. And talking to those guys, they say it's going to be quarter three of this year at the latest that the merger happens. So those three discontiguous networks are now going to become four, and then CenturyLink bought Quest not so long ago, so it's just going to be a shit show for who knows how long. It's going to be a nightmare. I'm not going to go anywhere near level three for sure. I have a CenturyLink circuit. It's been fairly solid for me, so I feel like it's probably going to be okay. I really don't want to get anywhere near like a legacy Time Warner network that's going to be, you know, like two layers removed from the parent company. It's just, man, it's getting scary because they still haven't integrated those networks. If you cross level three to Time Warner boundaries, that's different engineering departments that goes through still. So you're adding a third layer on top of that. It's just, it's getting scary. I'm not a fan. Man, I kind of went crazy on that one. Sorry, guys.
Oh, but in terms of expanding our transit, we're kind of targeting more internet exchange links and just kind of peering that way rather. It's like we have two 10 gig transit links and we're used to about 300 megs in each one, we're actually, our IX link is actually the one that's taking most of the traffic. So what we want to try and do is diversify and get another link to either Amsterdam, London, or Frankfurt. Probably Amsterdam.
Speaking of exchanges, I'm not sure if you guys have run across this, but Megaport, you know the guys out of Australia? They're starting to really go ham everywhere. They're putting a whole lot of nodes in the U.S., you know, and they, off their nodes, you can connect to Mega IX is what they call it, I think. It's an exchange, right? So you get a port into Megaport. For you guys that aren't familiar with Megaport, they drop a node in there and they pull dark fiber back to one of their cores, and it's all like software defined. It's super fast. You log into their portal. You can actually use your Facebook credentials to log into their portal. That's how easy they make this stuff. You order a port. A port's going to cost you about $500 a month, right? For a 10 gig port, $500 in. If you want to go to any of the big three cloud providers, you know, AWS, Azure, or Google, it's an extra $200. So for $700, you can get a 10 gig into one of those guys. Each additional cloud provider is another $200. And you can carve that up however you want in their portal, and it, I think, provisions within 2 minutes. It's insane how fast it is. But you can also do transit to any one of their other nodes. Interesting in this context, what I'm asking about is you can get that $500 port fee, but then you can hit their local Mega IX, whichever happens to be in your region, for free. They don't charge a port charge. So in essence, for $500, you can get 10 gigs into their exchange. And I don't know anybody that's using it yet. They say that it's pretty robust. I haven't seen the list of potential peers or anything off that. Have you guys seen that, used that, heard of that? Any war stories?
I haven't seen it in a few months, but when I saw it last, it was not an extensive list of people on their IX in a given, in the U.S. markets, largely because it's not been around very long yet.
So new.
Similar to.
But like.
Sorry.
Their Pacific ones, you know, Sydney and Auckland have a lot more activity. Yeah, they've been around a lot longer.
It looks similar to one called Unify IX, which is a European one. So they're rolling out a lot of nodes across Europe. And effectively, it'll be, from what it appears, like an IX where you can peer with anyone on any of the other POPs. So a very large distributed internet exchange.
I figured on those exchanges, because I'm in Texas, so my region is Dallas, where their main node is, and I think that's where their IX lands. And so I'm betting they have most of the major content providers, you know, your Cloudflare, Akamai.
Akamai, Cloudflare, Google, Hurricane, Latin IP, whoever that is, Microsoft, Riot Games, Twitch, and Yahoo.
Okay. So then there's no Netflix hanging off of that thing?
No Netflix.
All right.
Not yet.
That would be...
At least per peering DB, anyway.
Okay. That's still not bad.
No. So like the figures you're saying, pretty similar. Price actually for INEX, our local exchange, seems to be a little bit cheaper for that 10 gig. I think it's around, well, no, it's actually around the same price for the INEX one, about 7K.
Yeah, if you go to Equinix to hit their exchange, I think a 10 gig into theirs is somewhere around $1,000 a month. So it's at least double the price. Of course, if you look at their list of peers, it's going to be a lot more fleshed out. They've got, yep. I mean, they've got everybody there, everybody you want to hit. So theoretically, you're going to offload more traffic and easily $500 worth. So it makes sense to do that.
Absolutely.
Let's see. Trucking on down the list, I see TP-Link new. Somebody added that. What new TP-Link was talking about?
I only have one guess as to who added TP-Link to the list.
Tom Smithy.
Sorry. I know it's just the new APs that either controller or I don't know much about them, but I just heard good stories, so that's
yeah.
all there is.
So, I just jumped in. I got a review sample of their EAP320, I believe. It's it seems nice, pretty much a UniFi clone from everything I've heard and everything I've seen. Literally, even the UniFi interface or their controller interface looks just like UniFi. It even uses MongoDB on the back end. Everywhere you'd move your mouse to click on UniFi, you move your mouse the same place in this, and even the graphics look similar, the layout's similar, the map. I mean, it's literally a one-for-one clone. If you squint a little bit, you can't even read TP-Link, and you'll think you're looking at UniFi. What I thought was interesting and unique, the APs are built pretty tough. They have beamforming built in, right? So they're going to kind of directionalize the signal towards your clients, which UniFi doesn't have right now. And also, each unit, like these EAPs, the EAP320, you can log into it as a standalone unit and configure it. You don't actually have to have the controller. You can put all of the configuration right there on it. So you could stock a whole bunch of these, and if you want to throw them on a controller, you've got, say, 10 in a building, you can do that. If you want it to just be a single standalone, you can just configure it right through the web interface. So that's unique to this, and I thought that was pretty cool. Price comparison, I think they're about the same, only, yeah, they have features like beamforming, and then their bigger unit, their max unit, actually has 2 gig interfaces coming out of it, and you can LACP bond those things, so you can theoretically pull more than a gig through them, which I think is interesting. And it's got a lot of antennas and does all the same fancy stuff everybody else does, just with a couple of more bells and whistles. So I haven't put it through its paces yet. I've just sort of gone through the quick and dirty parts. But so far, I like it. I've heard reports that it works just as well as UniFi. Good client service. I've heard of people using it in an MDU setting and having really good success where they pulled out Ruckus and put this in. I'm not saying that it's a Ruckus killer, right, or that it's really designed for that environment. They've just had success in their initial trials, so it's interesting. And I plan on giving a better, more thorough review of it. And it actually, I got my review sample from ISPSupplies.com. Steve Disher over there hooked me up, so I have to give him a shout out. Yeah.
No, like, to be honest, it makes sense that they'd copy the UniFi UI, because in fairness, seems to be reasonably well thought out, you know. I suppose it's a mature product at this stage, you know.
Sincerest form of flattery, right?
Absolutely, no, but like, it makes sense. Like, the UI does what it says in the tin, doesn't overload you with information. It's really.
You were telling us, or you were telling me offline, that you guys have started rolling out a whole lot of UniFi on your managed customers and having really good success with it immediately, right?
Yeah, no, like, and it's, again, what you want is to be able to supply a wireless system and, you know, have your customers happy and, you know, obviously do the normal things like, you know, proper wireless survey, good position of antennas, but you don't really want your software letting you down or any stupid kinks coming in. But our performance of it has been, or the performance from the feedback from the clients have been very good. And from a management perspective, our staff love it. You know? So
you were a bit of a holdout on those, Tom. I think pretty much everyone else in the world has used them up to this point, other than you.
True. No, like we were using another vendor for a lot of our stuff, you know. And we kind of made a change.
Yeah, I've installed them in a lot of environments and had good success with nearly all of them.
Well, no, you see it. Like, you see, we'd seen some competitors, you know, who may not have been as knowledgeable about wireless, and they were getting very big installs and obviously getting repeat business out of it. So I think it made life a lot easier for those guys, and certainly making life a lot easier for our engineers, which makes a big difference. So I'd say it'll be something we'll be using more and more, actually.
Very cool. So how excited are you for that 6 gigahertz SXT announcement, Tom?
Thomas, I think that one's for you.
Just trying to get him back in the show.
I'm here, no worries. Not asleep yet. But the 6 gigahertz is nice, but I am a little bit disappointed they chose the SXT to do the 6 gigahertz. Because we know the antenna on the SXT is not quite the best out there. The angles are not good. It has a huge front-to-back ratio. And so I think they hopefully they continue with the product line and then bring other antenna designs and other products into the 6 gigahertz range. And that's pretty much all I have to say about that. I am not that big of a fan of the original SXTs. The SXT HGs are better, and of course you have the other, you know, Microtik products which have much better antenna patterns and antennas themselves. But you know, it's a price performance ratio thing, right? It costs it's dirt cheap, so you get the dirt cheap performance.
The LHGs, that'd be a nice one to have on the 6 gigahertz, or
yeah,
or even the sextants. They're not a bad one either, but. But yeah, certainly I was never a big fan of the sextants because never was a big fan of the nanos. I would never been a fan of them. Small antenna, loud amplifier, just never quite did it for me. But particularly because of our typical installs were, you know, further than 6 miles out. So you needed a reasonably directional antenna on it. The LHGs have been quite good for us, actually. I'm quite pleased with them.
Cool. Well, now we've reached the Thomas portion of the show. So it looks like we've got a note here on IPsec XAuth with Microtik. So I think you've spent, I think in your words, more time. You spent, what, half a day and that you didn't have to figure this problem out, Thomas, where you are trying to get a software client to work with XAuth on Microtik. And I think it's... You didn't let it defeat you. You didn't give up. You kept plugging away, and you eventually got it, right?
So, yeah. Basically, our original problem is that we manage a lot of clients. We, you know, and inside of our networking team and inside of all the computers and laptops that we use, it became a real issue of dealing with VPNs. Because we were using L2TP IPsec or SSTP, depending on, you know, the network conditions. If L2TP IPsec was not available because of networking reasons, you know, being blocked or etc., we would use SSTP. But it came down to the same problem that we had quite a few people and even more devices that we needed to distribute those VPN connections over. And also using native Windows VPN connections, you have a big problem with routing, right? We had custom scripts which would inject the proper routing information into the local computer's routing table after the VPN was dialed to get proper routing. And it just became such a pain to, from a administrative point, to manage it all and distribute and configure it all everywhere. So I took it upon myself to improve the situation. And yeah, it took me half a day, and so now we migrated everything to IPsec XAuth mod config, and we are using the Shure client, and I had quite a few issues getting it to work, but those issues were all actually client-side. So MikroTik was behaving well. It worked with Android, etc. It just didn't work with, actually, I tried three VPN clients, and two of them didn't work, and only the third one did. But in the end, everything now works. We are using the Shoe client, and it's really nice because we can now keep all of our VPN profiles in Git. And whenever whoever needs a VPN connection to anywhere, they just double-click the VPN profile from Git, and there they are.
True, that's an open-source package, right?
I don't think it's open-source, but it's free with an optional purchase.
Okay. I thought it was free.
It used to be open-source, if I remember correctly, but yeah.
All right, excellent.
I don't think it's open source because they also have a paid version, which wouldn't really make sense if it was open source.
Oh, I think like I'm talking about like an older version, much older version of it. I think there was some part of it anyway open source, if memory serves me correctly. Like not maybe not now though.
But the really nice thing about this the whole new setup is that. You have route pushing and split tunneling and split DNS and all of those things works, and it's just really nice, and it's going to save us a lot of time and a lot of just hassle.
Very nice.
I'm happy to report that it works very nicely, and we are happy with it.
Very cool.
Anyone ever used the EtherSoft VPN software?
I actually used it for some projects with raspberries and other things, but I personally didn't really like it. It's once you are used to the flexibility that MikroTik gives you, with you can do absolutely whatever with whatever type of VPN, whatever interface under it, total control of IPsec phase one, phase two policies, proposals, just completely everything. And then you come into a thing like EtherSoft, which is, I suppose it's built for a different use case, right? It's built to do things easily, but within certain constraints. But those constraints, of course, limit you to certain things, which I personally didn't like.
Yeah, no, I think it's the double-edged sword of MikroTik. You got that flexibility, but sometimes the flexibility has, it's like a gun. If the barrel's flexible enough, you can bend it all the way around and shoot yourself in the head.
I've made presentations on IPsec, and I think my IPsec knowledge is pretty up there, and it still took me half a day to make the Xalt work and figure out the client issues and fix everything and etc. So yeah, it's it requires some knowledge. It requires actually knowing what you are doing, like I suppose anything else with the MikroTik, right? But
a lot of prayers, occasional animal sacrifice. Yeah, it takes time.
Patience.
Yeah, there's a lot of build up. You got to collect the animals, and then you got to get the voodoo priestess and all that stuff. Thomas,
sharpen the knife.
There you go. I think the gods appreciate it more if the knife's dull, or if you just use a spoon. I think it's usually the preferred.
Saw sacredation.
Get busy living or get busy dying. Thomas, tell us about Unimus 0.3.1. What's new and fancy?
It was a bug fix release because it turned out we had a few issues. Since 0.3.0 was such a huge release with 20 new vendor support and all of that. So I think it was 4 days after release of 0.3.0, we patched, fixed, and hassled, and then 0.3.1 is now out, which fixed a lot of issues, and we haven't seen any problems since. So, yay.
Killer, man. That's awesome, dude. Unless you guys have anything else, I'm going to wrap it up. We cool?
Cool.
Excellent, rock and roll. All right.
I just have one more thing which I have to talk about.
What you got?
Oh, I love the interface lists on MikroTik. I can't imagine my life without it anymore. It's such a nice feature.
You've gotten so accustomed to it.
Oh, I just realized because as we were changing the VPNs everywhere, I had to log in and reconfigure some older routers that I had to then upgrade and all of that, and I realized that, oh man, my firewalls were so messy without it before, and it's like it's such a nice feature that I love it. If you aren't using interface lists, you should be. It makes so much stuff so easy.
So Thomas is talking about this. he's talking about the feature in the firewall now where you can create lists of interface, right? So it's a list name that references a bunch of interfaces. And I know a lot of guys, you know, like if you're inbound filtering, you're saying, you know, if it's coming in these interfaces, do these things. Now, instead of having to create multiple duplicate rules to cover all those interfaces, you can just create one rule and use the interface list, which is, I mean, it's been a while since it's been introduced, but I think we're kind of slow adopters. We stick on standard releases or bug fix releases for a long time, and now I know I've finally upgraded all of my stuff to, I was on 636.4, and I think I'm on 637.4 now on a lot of stuff, and it's been fairly stable. So you guys probably are up there now and have the interface list. You should jump in there and check it out.
No, that made a lot of sense, and actually I asked for it back in, I think it was 2009.
Ages ago.
I remember asking Giannis, and he said, just create firewall chains, blah, 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 blah. And I said, no, use, you know, we need a fit interface list like every other firewall vendor or result.
Are you guys using the raw firewalling yet?
Not really.
My personal policy is to not use fast track and therefore not to have to use RAW, because RAW is mostly used for doing with fast track. Of course, there are other uses as well, but you know, here I took Tom's advice. You know, just get bigger routers. Don't use fast track. It makes a mess out of everything. It you know, it's really complicated to deal with other things when you skip things in the packet flow.
I've tried using it a couple times and. I'll be banging my head against why something's not working, then I'll eventually remember that I created a raw rule, and I'll have to go over there and look at it, and it's like, man, this is actually causing more problems, because then somebody else will get in there, and they won't realize, and it's just like, oh, man, this is just...
Yeah, either fast track is eating packets, or the raw table is eating packets. It's just, sometimes, you know, if you need more performance, get a bigger router. MicroTik is so cheap, it's...
All right.
But if you're going to... one thing I was going to say, in our... kind of in my slot where I guide the MicroTik engineering team where they're doing their interfaces to make the GUI on the filters and that reflect the settings that you actually have entered, not all the settings you haven't set. So if you use stateful filters and you don't have the stateful column selected, they say, well, it looks like you're dropping everything or accepting everything, you know, that kind of way. That it's actually kind of unusual that if you do export, IP firewall filter export, you get more information available to you than you would actually if you were using the GUI by default. And I think, you know, they should really have a different view for the filters, the mangle and all that, that whatever setting you actually have selected in your rule, that that's what's displayed, not a load of columns that you never bothered selecting. So that's something that's just been annoying me for the past 11 years, MicroTik.
Word. So. And now that he said it, he's spoken it out loud, you shall make it so. And there we go.
Seriously.
All right, so Thomas, if people want to find you on the internet, what's the best way for them to do that?
Just look me up on, you know, Facebook, LinkedIn, you know, just Google my name. I'm fairly easy to find, and it's...
Do you have a contact form or a contact section on the Unimus website?
Oh, yeah, there's. We have forums, we have Facebook page, we have support emails. You can create tickets in our portal if you so choose.
There you go, rock and roll. So an easy way to find Thomas, go to unimus.net and click on the contact section. Get a hold of him there. Tom Smith, if people out on the internet, I can't imagine why they'd want to get a hold of you, but if they wanted to... maybe some dick pics or something. How would they go about doing that?
Xvideos.com/
This guy's on a Pornhub channel. Yeah, get in there.
I haven't a Pornhub channel just yet, but give me time. You know, I'm waiting for...
I really don't need the time.
I'm waiting for talent to be spotted and they go, you know, you could be a porn star. But it's not happened yet. I haven't been... Or even a model. That hasn't happened to me so far.
Never give up hope.
Can't imagine why.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Facebook, LinkedIn, Skype, you know. You can even hit me on my cell number, 087 or +353 87 619 2172.
Don't put that
I
on
love
there.
When people breathe heavily down the phone on me.
He's not kidding, people. He probably really does enjoy that. And Tom, it's good to have you back, man. It's good that you're breathing at night again, and you're sleeping like a normal human being, and you've sort
he doesn't do anything like a normal human
come
being.
Back to life. I'm assuming he respirates like a normal person. I don't know.
I'm making progress, get my mojo back. Although people are saying I'm much less patient than I was, or that I was getting very impatient, and now they say, now you're actually very impatient. I don't know what it is. So they said I was less impatient. I don't know. That's I was crazy. Growing more.
Well, it's hard for me to imagine you not being insane, because I haven't like seen you since you've got on the seat. So if you have energy and mojo again, I don't know that I could. I don't know. I don't think I can handle you.
Look at some of the Brothers Whisk videos from like a couple of months ago. You'll see that I'm slurring my words, and I'm not drunk. I'm just tired. Actually see I'm slurring words, and I'm just going, fucking hell, it's as if I'm drunk. And I was like, like when you hear back, because I love to listen to myself. I just mute when I'm talking, just hearing myself talking. I go, Jesus, that guy's talking a lot of sense. Microchip should really listen to him. And you could actually hear me slurring my words, and I was like, okay, fair enough, it was late at night, but I was like, Jesus, there's something weird. But yeah, hopefully I'm less slurred now.
That's cool. Let's hope so.
I don't feel a lot better.
Yeah, you sound a lot better, man. All right, so catch Mike, up. Other than typing over the top of all of these things with, I don't know, you're using a hammer, I assume. Just got a couple of hammers just banging on those keys. How can people get a hold of you on the internet if they'd like to do that kind of crazy thing?
If you Google my name, almost every page, or almost every link in the first 5 pages is going to be me. So you'll find me.
Is there another Mike Hammett you're competing with?
There actually is. There's a TV actor, Mike Hammett.
Gotcha. Wow.
I don't know what he does, but...
Gotcha.
But Google tells me when I Google my name.
I Google myself occasionally. I don't think that's narcissism. I think it's just, you know, it's promoting my brand. It's checking out where I land in the SEO world. And I've got 2 guys I'm competing against. There's a lawyer named Greg Soule, and then there's this redneck sheriff in Nacogdoches, Texas, that's always busting meth and crackheads. And so he's always just, man, I'm always just fighting with that bastard trying to stay on top. It's crazy. All right, everybody wants to read about crackheads getting crazy, you know, blowing up a bus they were cooking meth in or something. Anyway, if you want to find me, Greg Soule, you can find me at gregsoule.com. It's my blog covered in cobwebs that I never post to anymore. But there's still some old stuff that's not relevant anymore, and you can go and look at it and laugh at times gone by. Be sure to drop in and say hi on Facebook. You can find us at facebook.com, The Brothers Whisk. Mike is an amazing nanny on that page. He's always adding new content, petting all the people, changing their diapers, telling them what a good job they're doing, how they're unique snowflakes. He's always really quick to respond. That's a true story. He's really fast at responding. He's even been known to use 2 phones at one time, one in each hand. Classic Mike.
I only have 1 phone now. 1 phone.
1 phone to rule them all.
2 sims?
1 phone,
split
2
screen?
one phone, one cup, 2 phones. I'm sure he's got a phone on the side that he's just not telling his main phone about. You know how that works. He's got a burner phone. Yeah, keeps it hid. Anyway, you can find us on Facebook. A lot of fresh content. Any questions, comments, please post them up there. We've responded to everything, I think, at this point. If you're old school and you just want to do email because you don't do the Facebook thing, you do contact us at thebrotherswisp.com. That'll pop in, and then I will take it and I'll make these other guys answer it because I don't actually have any of the answers. All of my knowledge is derived. Do what? A postal address? I thought you said people could have your phone number and your home address to send you beer to, so we'll just use yours. They can send it all the way to Ireland, care of the Brothers Whisp.
Well, see, when people send Tom things, doesn't report back on them.
Like Christmas ornaments?
He got them.
You were just lucky. I was very tempted to put that decoration around my appendage and send you a photo that way.
I think I told everybody 5 minutes ago about dick pics and Tom, so there you are. I told you. True
no,
stories.
It's okay. Edward Snowden told John Oliver that there was no dick pic program in the NSA, so I'm okay. I'm safe.
Did you see him wink, though? It was kind of a wink. There is not one. Wink.
No, they'd be literally like, no, some poor old NSA engineer is never going to be the same again. He's like, no, not another one. So.
For the viewers, something else to think about other than Tom's crotch is...
if you can do that. It's one of those things that gets burned into your memory. It's like that time you walked down your grandma naked. Ugh, never forget.
Is that we decided to send Tom a gift for Christmas. an ornament for his Christmas tree. And it was a picture of Trump.
His hero, his idol.
Like,
you know,
on a porcelain, like, it was actually quite a nice decoration. And with Trump's smug face with 45th president on it, I was actually like, I was quite flattered that he went to the trouble of that.
Yeah, you're part of history now, Tom.
And, but yeah. I was going to add to a joke that if the NSA engineer had a really cruel boss, the boss could say, you need to analyze that picture. Maybe there's hidden data in it. That would just really upset the engineer.
I'm glad that you brought it back to your penis. Thanks for that, Tom.
Sorry.
At the end
of
everything.
Well, I was very close to doing it. And then I went, Jesus, I might be kicked off the putter's wisp.
Good times. All right. everybody who listens... I can't imagine anybody watches, especially after this conversation. I'm fairly certain nobody's going to watch just for fear.
Send your dick pics in the comments below.
Tom's holding up a picture that says, send nudes. Just kidding, just pictures of your dick. It says right there. All right. Thanks, listeners.
All right, well, we are turning this into the Pornhub channel, right? We said.
All right. Thanks to all the listeners, all the subscribers. Thanks for everybody who sends us questions and comments. Please keep them coming back. If you happen to run into any of us at a show, please shake our hands, say hi, any of that good stuff.
Quick note on a show. Like, next week, we get your next is Wisp America in Memphis. So
that's right.
Look forward to I'll be there. Miller will be there. Wilson will be there.
I wish I was there.
I wish I was there. Go eat at Gus's fried chicken. Best fried chicken in the world. That's no joke. For everybody listening to this, absolutely. Hit the one on Front Street. That one's super cool. Order ahead and pick it up because it's going to be hella busy unless you're there at off time. All right, everybody, thank you and bye.